Welcome to Brave Together podcast here on UK Health Radio, an empowering resource for the parents of children with disabilities, neurodivergence, and all unique needs.
There's a reason I called my book The Other Side of Change, and it's because all of the extraordinary people that I interviewed for this book, despite having endured harrowing changes, right? Changes that for many of us would be unimaginable, were all so grateful for the person they became on the other side. They weren't necessarily grateful they had to endure that change because the change itself is often crappy, right? Who would ever invite illness or loss into their life willingly? But they were deeply filled with thanks for the person that they saw emerge as a result of it.
Hi, Bravies. It's me, Jessica Pate, Brave Mom, author, and founder of the nonprofit We Are Brave Together. Today, Susanna Pace Lavelle and myself are talking to another expert on a topic deeply relevant to you, the caregiving parent. In this episode, number 239, we sit down with Dr. Maya Shunker, a cognitive scientist and host of the acclaimed podcast, A Slight Change of Plans. Maya shares her profound insights on navigating life's unexpected turns and the transformative power of change. Through her personal stories and expert knowledge, she reveals how embracing change can lead to self-discovery and growth. Join us as we explore the revelations that come with life's challenges and learn how to harness them for personal evolution. Dr. Maya Shunker is a cognitive scientist and creator of the podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, previously named Best Show of the Year by Apple. She served as a senior policy advisor in the Obama White House, where she founded and chaired the Social and Behavioral Sciences team, which President Obama formalized by executive order in 2015. She was also appointed as the first behavioral science advisor to the United Nations. Maya has a BA from Yale and a doctorate from Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar and completed a postdoctoral fellowship in cognitive neuroscience at Stanford. She is a former violin student of Itzhak Perlman at Juilliard, and she's now the author of the book with Penguin Random House, The Other Side of Change. Here is just a quick reminder to please join our free community at wearebravetogether.org. To follow us on Facebook and Instagram as well, please rate and review this podcast and share episodes with your friends and family. And don't forget to check out full episodes and video highlight clips on our YouTube channel. Now, please enjoy our rich conversation with the brilliant, lovely, warm hug in human form, Dr. Maya Shunker. Dr. Maya Shunker, we are thrilled to have you on Brave Together today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jessica and Susanna. I really appreciate it.
We've been counting down the minutes, actually.
I'm honored.
Thank you so much for being here. I will say personally that I've been listening to your podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, for quite a while, and I just absolutely loved it. And I felt like I learned so much listening to different guests, listening to you. And I love how you call your audience slight changers. And I think that's adorable. But I for so long, I thought, okay, we need to hear what Dr. Maya has learned from her guests.
I've learned so much. Oh my gosh.
Yes. And we will talk about it today. So you began your podcast in 2021. Is that right?
That's right.
And really, what was like the spark that got you started?
You know, the podcast was actually born out of a place of grief. So in early 2020, at this point, my husband and I had been on a 6 or 7 year journey at that point to try to start a family together. And after years of so many obstacles and disappointments and heartbreaks, finally we could see a light at the end of the tunnel because our surrogate was pregnant and we were just over the moon. And I was planning this whole life that was up ahead. And you know, the earliest identity I ever anchored myself to was aspiring mom. You know, from the time I was a little girl, I just always imagined one having a family of my own. And so it felt like everything was finally aligning. The stars were aligning. And then we got news that she miscarried. And I remember being so destabilized by this news. I have had many formative experiences with change, you know, lots of career pivots and unexpected turns in my life, but I felt it such a loss for how to move forward. And I think part of that was because by nature, and I'm sure so many people can relate, we're the kind of people who work our way through challenges, right? We're like, okay, I'm just going to hustle my way through this. I'm just going to work harder. That was always my approach when I was faced with obstacles in the past. And in the context of fertility or starting a family, there's no such thing as working harder. The universe is indifferent to how much you want something, right? It doesn't care. And I felt like the lack of control, actually, right? The reminder that the illusion of control that I walk around with each and every day, which psychologists say is often an overestimate. We overestimate how much we actually will dictate the outcomes in our lives. It's shattered when something like this happens, that illusion, right? And you are forced to confront the reality that we just have less control than we'd like. And while it would be really comfortable for us to have our hands firmly on the steering wheel at all times, sometimes life will humble you in this way. And I remember feeling very lonely in my grief, you know, in addition to just the loneliness of this sort of experience, the whole world had shut down because of COVID. So I couldn't even grieve alongside my closest family and friends who were among the very few people who knew that this was even underway, this whole plan. And, you know, one of my favorite research studies from my field says that we are more stressed when we're told we have a 50% chance of receiving an electric shock than when we're told we have a 100% chance of receiving an electric shock. And I resonate so much with this finding, you guys. I just want to know how the story is going to end. I don't want to have to grapple with any ambiguity and uncertainty. Tell me what the roadmap is, right? And so it was because of all these complicated feelings that were just running around in my brain that I came up with the idea of a slight change of plans. I desperately wanted to, kind of honestly, very similar to what you have conceived of with Brave Together, I wanted to find community with others. I wanted to connect with people who had been through changes of their own kind and had found their way to the other side, and to figure out what wisdom they could share with me, what life lessons they had learned, what was really hard for them, and if there were similarities across our stories, even though they didn't look the same on their surface. And the show became everything I could have ever imagined and more. You know, I did not know at the time how much this topic of change would resonate with people all over the world. And I've been truly moved by that response. It made me feel like, yes, we're all going through our own stuff, but actually the psychological challenges that we face when we're going through a change of any kind are all very similar. And so we are united in a way that transcends difference. It is a very powerful, unifying feeling.
Yes, 1,000% yes. We would say that, I mean, that's what we say in We Are Brave Together, is that, you know, it is so comforting and transforming to meet other people who get you and get your story. Even though our stories might be different, all the feelings, all the grievings, all the wondering, all the worrying, all of it is, we're all in alignment there.
Yes. And I think what I discovered, I mean, certainly I had this experience with a slight change of plans where I would hear from listeners who were confronting challenges that were so harrowing and, again, did not look like mine. They would, you know, one of them, I remember Jules wrote to me and said, I've just lost my husband. I'm a widow. I'm a single mom to three little boys and I'm unemployed. Like, how do I move forward? And then I heard from Eric who said, my closest coworker just lost her mom and her beloved dog. And I was able to send her this podcast, you know, as a way to give her some feeling of hope in this moment. And I heard from someone else who lost her son to a years-long battle with drug addiction. And what you realize is that, yes, the challenges are the same. And so then it would make sense that a lot of the solutions would be the same too, right? A lot of the techniques and a lot of the wisdom that we can harness in these moments will be shared as well. And I think that was actually my biggest discovery when I decided to write my book, The Other Side of Change, I was eager to understand, okay, well, what would it mean to think and feel differently about my change? Because, you know, there's this well-worn mantra, well, you can't change what happens to you, but you can control your reaction. And it sounds good. It sounds empowering. But in the moment, and when we found out, by the way, that there was a second miscarriage and we lost twins, at that point, I was like, I'm over this mantra. Okay. Like, how the heck am I actually supposed to think and feel differently about my change? No one's telling me how. And actually, my book is a response to that visceral need I had in that moment, which is, I do want to have a different relationship with my change, but I don't have a roadmap to get from point A to point B. And so this book was my effort to marry the most poignant, most beautiful stories of change I could find in the world alongside the science that I study of the human mind to figure out how we can give people the resources they need in the hardest moments of their lives so that they actually can renew their relationship. And one thing that's been so uplifting for me is that I've seen an evolution happen within me in the course of writing this book as I've dealt with various changes in my life, right? You know, to this day, I'm still not a mom and I'm still kind of grappling with this and what that means. And I do feel like that wisdom is universal. The wisdom captured in this book is universal. And I just feel so honored I get to share it, you know, with the world.
Well, I will say we received a copy of your book and Jessica and I can relate very much so to each other in that we are recovering perfectionists. That's her coined phrase but that I quickly adopted. But we are, I mean, in my life and in Jessica's lives, we are very much like we think we got it. You know what I mean? Like, well, until we became mothers.
Until we became mothers.
That we, really? That were, you know, came through us, right? So we have this idea that we can make things happen. We are movers, we're shakers, we're type A, we're hard workers. We have no problem knocking down doors. Like, we can make things happen. And so
I need to join your club, by the way. Recovering perfectionist over here too.
In.
So it's
you're
a trio
in.
Now.
One. Okay, great. You're in. We're vice president. You can be VP.
Wonderful. Love it.
So, well, I'm just curious then, how can we talk about this idea? Because these coexist in my life, like having to adapt to new change, a new normal, something other than the vision that I had for myself and my sort of temperament, what makes me, what soothes me is this idea that I have agency over certain 100%. Things, right? And so then the control comes in. So how can I settle in my being
and yes.
anxious,
Yes. So I love that you asked this because this is exactly the challenge I was grappling with and I have grappled with as I've navigated many, many changes in my life, which is on the one hand, it would be so great if I could wave a magic wand and not desire as much control as I want and not need agency because agency is my drug. Like that's what makes me feel like life is okay again. You know, it's the feeling like, okay, I'm back in control and I know what I'm going to do and I have a plan, right? Like nothing makes me happy. Nothing makes my brain happier than a plan. And so it was so interesting when I was conceiving of this book, I thought, okay, well, for those who are truly enlightened, right? For those who have this more Buddhist philosophy of like, I surrender to the universe and we'll just, you know, take what happens, take what comes. I'm not like that. So I wasn't able to just write a book where I said, and therefore we shall relinquish our feeling or need for control. Instead, what I tried to do was figure out, well, in the throes of change, what can we still control? What is still something where we could exert agency so that we can feed the part of our brain that wants to be able to do something? Mm-hmm. And as a cognitive scientist, of course, the answer to that is, well, our minds are things that we can control. We are always capable of a shift in perspective, a shift in values, a shift in the beliefs that we carry about the world and about ourselves, a change in our abilities. These are actually things that we can shape. And it is very liberating when you feel like nothing is in your control, right? Like the rug has been pulled out from under you and no one's given you a manual about how to move forward to be given a guide. In fact, I call it a change survival kit. At the end of the book, I have a distillation of, you know, the best practices because I wanted that guide to bring me from point A to point B. So let me just give you a concrete example of what one of these agency-based steps can look like. And people can do this, by the way, whether they're in the throes of a change right now or are reflecting on a past change or anticipating a future change. By the way, that's my expertise. I love ruminating. I love worrying. I'm always thinking, catastrophizing, like, well, what if this happens? And what if this happens? And what if this happens? And so I've written this for people who just are anxious about the future, right? And what can happen. And one of these techniques has to do with our sense of self-identity. So one big aha moment I had for me in the writing of The Other Side of Change and in hosting A Slight Change of Plans is that one of the reasons change can be so threatening is that it threatens our sense of identity at this really fundamental level. So when I reflect, for example, on the miscarriages, right, dealing with the pregnancy losses, it wasn't just the pregnancy losses that I was grieving. It was also a feeling that I'd lost this fundamental sense of who I was, right? As I mentioned, from the time I was a little kid, a huge part of my future identity was becoming a mom one day. I also had an experience when I was a little kid where I was an aspiring concert violinist and I was on the up and up, right? I was studying at Juilliard. My violin teacher was Itzhak Perlman, one of the most renowned violinists in the world. And I was soloing with orchestras and winning competitions. And I really had big dreams of going pro one day. And then I had my slight change of plans when a hand injury that I sustained on one day while playing ended my dreams. And doctors told me that I couldn't play the violin again. And again, what was so curious about my grief as a 15-year-old, which is when this happened, was that I wasn't just grieving the loss of the instrument. I was also grieving the loss of myself at this more fundamental level. And so, Susanna, when you were saying, you know, you have to kind of come to terms with this new reality you're facing, despite all the visions you had of what motherhood was going to be like, that is grief around an identity, right? Like, this is the kind of mom I'm going to be. This is the sort of family I'm going to have, right? This is the kind of community I'm going to build. And all those things get challenged when reality hits. And so one recommendation I would have, and I wish I'd known this at the time, because I think it would have made my changes a bit easier to navigate, is to anchor your identity not simply to what you do, to the roles or labels that you have, whether it's soccer coach or artist or mother or podcaster or writer, but also to why you do those things.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A CogniMovement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the CogniMovement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What is it that makes you love what you do? What is it that made you want to achieve a goal in the first place? And if you can anchor your identity to that, it can remain a stable anchoring force when the world around you is swirling. So to make this concrete, I asked myself, what was it that I loved about the violin, right? Strip away the superficial features. I realized that at its core, I loved human connection. And that is really fundamental to who I am. Like, I am a person who thrives when I am emotionally connecting with people. Like, in this moment, I am filling that need, right? And just because I lost the violin didn't mean I lost what led me to love it in the first place. The exercise simply becomes, well, where else can I express this fundamental desire that I have, right? And so when life challenges your dreams, when life threatens that sense of identity, ask yourself, well, what is it that I was looking forward to? What is it that I love about this thing? Maybe it's that I love caring for people. Maybe it's that I love giving back to my community. Maybe it's that I love learning a new skill. Maybe it's that I love having a creative outlet for myself. Whatever it is, don't be judgmental of what your why is. Use that as a compass to help guide you when life makes other plans, because the human mind is so resilient and so adaptable. You just have to give it strong anchors so that you feel like there's something firm you can still hold on to, that you haven't lost everything just because you lost something that can help guide you forward.
That is so insightful. We are going to borrow that and steal that. And I think we need to put your book in our retreat brave bags. So I will have to talk to you later about buying a whole bunch of books, because we really, I think our audience needs your survival kit and all these stories.
Yeah.
And I think
I will happily donate these books for your retreat bags. I'll have to figure out how to make that work with the publisher. Okay. But
thank you. Oh my gosh, yeah. That would be wonderful. Going back to the illusion of control.
Yeah.
Do you think that if we really taught people, if this could be taught from a young age, that control is an illusion, that maybe we wouldn't quite be as devastated when change occurs, when a diagnosis is delivered, you know, on your child or anyone around you? Do you think that's possible?
It's such a great question, and it's a philosophical question at its core, because you also need to wonder what it would look like if all of us had evolved to feel like we didn't have much control. That wouldn't be a good state either, right? We would likely descend into a state of nihilism, like, why should I try hard at anything? Life is just going to decide whatever it wants for me. And does it even matter if I'm the best mom? Like, who cares? Why am I putting in so much effort? So I actually think that it is deeply psychologically adaptive for us to believe we have control. The challenge is that when life throws us an unexpected curveball and a negative one, it can lead us to blame ourselves often, right? To wonder, what have I done wrong? I'm so used to being able to control things. If I'm responsible for the good stuff, then I have to hold myself responsible for the bad stuff. And so it's more about being aware of the pitfalls of this way of thinking. But what's so curious about the research, Jessica, is that research shows actually people who believe they have more control do have higher well-being on average. And so it's because they feel a greater sense of purpose and meaning in their lives. And so it really comes down to this delicate dance that we must each walk in, I guess you can't walk a dance, a delicate dance that we must each engage in our lives, which is loosening our grip maybe on control. Like, that might be a slightly better way to visualize it, right? Which is believing, yes, of course, we have control. And we do, by the way, have control over lots of things, but we don't have infinite control. And loosening our grip on that need. In fact, there's a concept in psychology that could be helpful here. It's known as the internal locus of control. So people who have a strong internal locus believe that they're the ones dictating outcomes. People who have a strong external locus of control believe that it's mostly things are random. You know, the universe will just decide X or Y. It doesn't really matter what I think. And so I would visualize as maybe moving a little bit to the left of the or a little bit to the right on the continuum, depending on where you are to begin with. There's no right or wrong way to be. It's just a matter of recognizing where you are on that continuum and then nudging yourself to the right or nudging yourself to the left when you're confronting a situation like this. But, you know, one story actually in the book deals exclusively with this challenge of control. And one woman had spent her whole life at this point just trying to do good in the world. And then she has this really tragic accident where she causes harm to someone else. And she has to grapple with that. And she has to learn deliberately how to relinquish her need for this kind of obsessive control. And I found this woman's name is Marianne. I found her story incredibly instructive in my own life.
I just actually had an aha moment. I had an epiphany about the Change Survival Kit because, Jessica, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, because even though Jessica's son Ryan and my daughter Arizona have different diagnoses, right, they both tend to perseverate on certain things or a worry or an issue. Like last year for like a month and a half or 2 months long, not kidding you, every day, all day, my daughter Arizona was worried about contracting rabies. And there was no context for this, right? Totally. She probably just read something about rabies and was like, instant death, yep. Right? And so anytime we would go into somebody's house or even our own home, she's like, are there any bats in the attic? And I was like, number one, we don't have an attic, right? So, but I love this idea that you mentioned, like anchoring our identity, I think could work in this context too. Like, so tell me why you're worried about, like, tell me what's beneath that. What is the worry?
Strip back the layers.
Strip down the layers.
Yeah.
And Arizona is so literal. So when you strip down the layers in a way that you're kind of even taking the emotion out of it.
Yeah.
But also are getting annoyed because you're answering the same question 2,700 times a day.
Yeah.
How can we then guide them? So what if we had a Change Survival Kit for, you know, fill in the blank, right? Different groups of people, or maybe, you know, maybe, or maybe not. It's just the perception and the mind shift, right? So
no, that's exactly right. And it's so interesting you mentioned this. So I feel like I have a PhD in rumination. You know, I really struggle with these obsessive thoughts. And I've had periods of my life where I was just fixated on something I was really terrified of. I actually, it's so interesting. I mean, I relate to your daughter. My fear was not of rabies, but it was about one day having a child who really suffered. That was what, as a 17-year-old in college, while all my friends were out having a good time and partying and being normal, I was in my dorm room reading about hate crimes and being terrified that I might one day have a child that might suffer. And what did that mean morally? And was it okay to even have kids? Like, it was just leading me to spiral. And I obsessed over this for years. And so, first of all, your daughter's not alone. Okay. You can just be like, hey, I met this person, Maya, today. And she just wants you to know that it's okay to have these fixations. And Maya had these fixations for years and she's on the better side of it. So that's one thing. But number two, because I have such intimate experience with this issue of rumination, which, by the way, is so common after a big change in life, it's our brain's way of coping with uncertainty. So because we don't like how destabilized we feel, we try to grasp for certainty. We try to find clear black and white answers. And what happens is we just get onto a hamster wheel where we're actually just spinning in circles, desperately wanting reassurance, but that reassurance never fully satisfies us. So 5 minutes later, we need more reassurance and more reassurance. And I devote an entire chapter of the book, Susanna, to the topic of mental spirals and ruminations. And there are 7 or 8 different techniques that people can use when they find themselves in these maddening spirals. Let me just share a couple of them with you right now. So one that I've used very effectively as an adult is a technique called mental time travel. So our brains have a remarkable ability. Oh, sorry. And I should also clarify that the first line of treatment for rumination that is really compromising a person's mental health is SSRIs and cognitive behavioral therapy. So the techniques I'm about to share should supplement those if you feel that your mental health is being compromised and you should see a doctor and get advice on that front. But for people who are dealing with more run-of-the-mill rumination following a big change, here are some everyday techniques that you can use. So with mental time travel, our brains have been endowed with a remarkable ability to both travel forward in time and backward in time. And we can actually leverage this and use it to our advantage in these moments of change. We can travel into the past to remind ourselves of moments when we were stronger than we thought we were going to be, when we proved ourselves wrong because we were certain we were going to be fixated on something well into the future, but actually it was a transient worry. We can also go into the past during moments of societal unrest, you know, when we can remind ourselves, for example, during the COVID outbreak, okay, this is not the first time that we have endured a pandemic of sorts. This is not the first time we've had to confront existential crises through a combination of collective action and self-sacrifice. Humanity has persisted. So that's the benefit of going into the past. The benefit of going to the future is that it can be a wonderful reminder that your situation is transient. So sometimes when I wake up at 2 a.m. and my mind is going because I'm ruminating over, you know, a weird conversation I had with a coworker, or, oh my God, why did I say this thing over this thing? Or this worry that I have in my brain feels like the biggest worry in the whole universe. And how is not everyone else worried about this thing? Am I the only one? Right? That's what you're thinking. You can forecast 5 hours into the future, 5 days into the future, 5 weeks, 5 years, 50 years. And you ask yourself, am I still going to be as worried about this then? Is this problem still going to carry as much significance? And what this does is that it breeds some healthy psychological distance between you and your current preoccupations. Because you think to yourself, oh my gosh, wait, in 5 years, like, is this person even going to still be my coworker? You know, is my boss who's giving me issues, is this person who goes to the same club that I go to, who's so mean? And like, it just contextualizes the present day moment and allows you to see that this is something that you will likely move through in time. Another technique that I really love is called affect labeling. And this is where you simply take a moment to label the complicated emotions that you're feeling. So in the aftermath of a negative change, right, you're confronted with this barrage of information, right? Whether it's from medical professionals or providers or occupational therapists. I mean, they're just throwing a bunch of stuff your way and you're like, oh my God, how do I sort through all of this? And for this community here, what steps do I take for my child? Which parts of this do I ignore, right? It's so overwhelming. What you can do is just take a step back, and instead of just feeling this large looming negative cloud, you try to label exactly what you're feeling. So, oh, I'm feeling envy because the mom I see at the local PTA, she has a neurotypical kid and she's not dealing with the stuff I have to deal with. Or I'm feeling really frustrated because my daughter has asked me if there's bats in the non-existent attic we have upstairs 450 times today. I'm feeling despair because I can't imagine having a brighter future. It turns out, as research shows, that when we label our emotions, we again create psychological distance. So we are able to see that the emotion is something that's happening to us rather than being us, that we are not defined by the emotion. And then the last tip, and again, there's tons of techniques where this comes from, and I outline all of these in chapter 3 of the book. But another technique is kind of runs counter to popular wisdom, which is we've been told that unless we persistently and directly confront our negative emotions, they might rear their ugly heads with even greater vengeance down the line. So you hear a lot of people saying, you can't repress anything. You have to fully confront it. You have to fully process this. Well, actually, the research shows a far more complicated story here, and one that's much more subject to individual differences. It turns out that actually distraction is a really helpful and productive tool when you are in the throes of rumination and in the aftermath of a big change. And so if going on a walk with a friend and not talking about your big change is helping you, if playing I can't even say it, believe I'm saying this because I don't play video. If playing video games helps distract you, if going on a run, like, you don't have to worry that utilizing distraction, you're going to pay for it in the future, because the research simply doesn't bear that out. That's not what it shows. In fact, people who use distraction often have a more resilient response down the line when it's used appropriately. And so, again, these are just a couple of these techniques, but I just wanted to share as much as I could in one answer. Without hijacking the whole podcast.
So all of you out there who you've heard me say, watching Netflix is not true self-care practice. Well, you heard it from Dr. Maya. Go ahead and distract
really
yourself
does help
with some Netflix or
Hulu. Yeah, it's astonishing how much distraction can rescue us. Because again, what we're trying to do when we're in the throes of it, right? Like, when we are really in it with our negative feelings and we are feeling that kind of hopelessness and despair and that our lives are in crisis, we cannot see our problem objectively because we are too close to it emotionally. And so all of the strategies that I discuss in the book help give us that emotional distance we need to try to poke holes in our narratives, to try to help us see our situation from new angles, from new perspectives, to engage in what's called cognitive reappraisal so that we can have a different emotional response to the same situation.
I don't know about you, Susanna, but I'm so excited about what I'm going to learn by just really taking in everything from this book.
Yeah.
It's one of those books. So the people that I've been able to send, my friends who have sent advanced copies to, they constantly are sending me highlighted pages. So it's one of those books people will be highlighting a lot. And you know, it's really interesting. Like I unexpectedly, because this is how life works, I'm dealing with a very unexpected health crisis, a health diagnosis in my family. And it has taken over our winter break. And one thing that I had to do, and it was so interesting because I'm like, I can't just be one of those people that talks the talk. I pulled out my book and I had to read aloud passages to remind myself of this stuff. And so that is to say, like many of these insights, it takes a couple times to like really internalize it. You know, I study this stuff for a living and I'm still humbled constantly by how many reminders I need. So it's very much a work in progress. Like, don't get frustrated if you're not solving everything right away. That is a very natural part of the human experience, you know, to have to just figure things out slowly, and it's going to be a nonlinear path forward.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, what I also really, really love about this book are all of the real life anecdotes, like the anecdotal stories. I like eat them up. I just love to hear about somebody who has a name and their age and where they're from and what's happened, because I am just immediately sucked into that visual of the story. And so I find that to be so supportive and, again, riveting. Like, I just like, I need to know, and I need to know what's going to happen in 5 years to this particular, because now I'm invested. So on that note, another question I have for you is, where are you now compared to the big grief that you experienced with regard to the miscarriages? And how can you describe where you are now compared to 2020?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I have so many things to say on this. I mean, the first is, we have a cognitive illusion called the end of history illusion, which refers to the fact that while we fully acknowledge we've changed considerably in the past, so, you know, if you show me pictures of Maya from high school or college, I'll be like, oh my God, cringe. Like, I have no relation with that person. It goes away. But yet, so interestingly, if you ask me, well, how much are you going to change in the future? I would say, oh, no, I'm done changing. Like, what you see is what you get. This is the finished product. How curious is that? Like, what a funny quirk of our brains that we think at any given moment in time, we have become the person we're going to be for the rest of our lives, that we are done changing. There's actually a lot of hope in this bias, and I'll tell you why. At the outset of a change, when we feel so daunted by what's up ahead and we think we can't possibly bear it, there's no way I will be able to endure what is coming my way. There is some solace in remembering that the person you will be on the other side of the change will actually be a different person from the person you are right now. We are always changing, and the big changes in our lives actually accelerate these internal shifts. The new demands and stresses of this new world that we've been thrust into will reveal extraordinary things to us that can help us shape who we become moving forward. And we often forget that when a big change happens to us, it also leads to lasting change within us. And so I just want people to sit in that for a second, which is you will develop new perspectives, new attitudes and beliefs, new ways of seeing yourself in the world, new abilities, things you can't possibly imagine today that will make you more equipped to handle that change. There's a reason I called my book The Other Side of Change, and it's because all of the extraordinary people that I interviewed for this book, despite having endured harrowing changes, right? Changes that for many of us would be unimaginable, were all so grateful for the person they became on the other side. They weren't necessarily grateful they had to endure that change because the change itself is often crappy, right? Who would ever invite illness or loss into their life willingly? But they were deeply filled with thanks for the person that they saw emerge as a result of it. And I find that to be an incredibly inspiring message. I was skeptical at first. I say that there's two things I'm allergic to, soy and platitudes. And I was like, really? Silver lining? But then I saw it happen to myself. So if you had come into my room the night of the second miscarriage, when I had the, you know, blanket over me and I was sulking and feeling horrible and despondent and all the negative feelings that one feels in these moments. And if you had said, Maya, will anything good ever come of this? I would have been like, no. Will there be anything redemptive? No. Will you become a better person because of this? Oh my God, hell no. Why would I ever become a better person because of this? And yet I've proven myself wrong in all of those regards. So today I am not a parent and you're looking at the most hopeful, the most peaceful and the most positive version of Maya that has ever existed, which has been shocking for me. Now, I explain in more detail how it is I arrived at this point in the final chapter of the book, which is more memoir, but I want to share one insight that's relevant to all of us during change. What change can do is it can uncover longstanding beliefs that we've carried that may be holding us back. So one thing that change did for me is when, you know, my dreams of motherhood were kind of disappearing and, you know, we had talked about all sorts of ways to start a family and, you know, we weren't succeeding. I remember questioning why it is that I felt I had no value if I never became a mom. And I had to go really far back to understand that, but that's what change can do. Change can serve as a point of revelation. In fact, you know, when a negative change happens in our lives, it can feel like a personal apocalypse, right? Like the world that we knew is now gone. And there's something really interesting about the etymology of the word apocalypse, which is it comes from the Greek word apokalypsis, which means revelation. So change, yes, it can upend us, but it can also reveal things to us about who we are that are maybe holding us back. And in this particular case, I realized that due to a constellation of factors like the cultural messaging I grew up with, the conversations I'd overhear among my aunties growing up in an Indian American family, messages I'd see on TV, stigma faced by child-free women, I really had been led to believe that if I didn't become a mom, my value as a woman was going to be greatly diminished, that I could not live a full and satisfying life. And what change does is it brings these views into the light, whatever they are. I just give mine as an example, and it leads you to interrogate whether you actually have good reason to believe them in the first place. Most of our beliefs are not based on deliberate conscious reasoning. They are things that we absorbed often subconsciously just from the influences that we grew up around. And they're tangled up with our sense of love and belonging because we often learned a lot of these messages when we were kids, before our brains were even fully formed, before we could critically think about those beliefs. And I love this element of change because I have since done a lot of work to unpack why so much of my self-worth was wrapped up in parenthood and why it's actually not the right way to think about things, and that I'm a whole human with or without having children. And, you know, it's funny because I'm on this podcast now where I'm talking to people who all have children, I'm assuming, right? But I want people to know that, again, like, no matter what change you're going through, right, we all feel versions of the same thing. And if we wrap our identity so closely into something, we want to unpack, or if we feel low self-esteem, or we feel we're unworthy, or we're not up for the task, or if we're asking why me, I mean, these are all the questions we all ask. And these are the kinds of topics that my book engages with. And so I can't believe I'm standing here on the other side of change, having not actually achieved the goal that I set out to achieve, and feeling the way that I feel. It was proof to me that the message of the book is real. And I'm so deeply indebted to the people I interviewed for this book, because I credit them entirely for this self-evolution that I've experienced. It's the most extraordinary gift that I've been given in my adult life.
Wow. And I would love to ask, okay, so there are going to be people who are listening to this, and they're going to say, okay, I want self-evolution, I want change. I feel so paralyzed. I feel so stuck in anger, in hurt, in resentment, in grief, or worry. Like, what would you say to those people who are listening?
Oh my gosh. So first of all, I have been there, done that. This is known in psychology as identity paralysis. So who we are and who we can become is suddenly all called into question, and we feel completely stuck in place. So, you know, it's really interesting, because the language I used earlier was, my motivation for writing this book was to get people to think and feel differently. And I use differently very intentionally, which is that when we feel stuck in a certain way of thinking, when we feel paralyzed, whether by fear or resentment or anger, nothing is more refreshing than just feeling a different way about our situation. Eventually, I hope that leads to feeling better about it. And the promise of the book is that you will have enough perspective shifts that you will start to feel better about it. But even if after one chapter you start to feel differently, what liberation sits in that? Like, there is so much freedom in feeling not the same way that you've been feeling for months or years, right? And I think that one thing I want to promise everyone is that no matter how deeply entrenched their views are, I can say this as a cognitive scientist, the mind is deeply malleable. Our brains are plastic. I have had well-worn neural patterns that I've cemented for decades that I have been able to unwind with the right reframings, with the right thought experiments, with the right questions to ask, with the right scientific techniques. That is what I'm trying to distill in The Other Side of Change. So it is never too late. Even if you're feeling paralyzed and you've been feeling paralyzed for years, I promise you there is a light at the end of the tunnel for you. I really firmly believe this. I didn't mean to make you cry, Jessica.
No. I'll share some more offline, but yeah, I think I need a tissue again. Thank you.
Sorry.
What I find to be so beautiful and so touching about everything that you're saying, besides the fact that you are talking the talk, but you know, it's like you are teaching what you probably most needed to learn.
I'm 100%.
Right. And so 100%. What I love so much is that this is available to each and every one of us at any moment in our lives. It is available to us.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yes.
And sometimes that's all we need to know, even though we're like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be under my covers for 3 more days.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And the other thing is, like, I wrote this book from a very empathetic place because I was in a state of perpetual exhaustion at that point. Due to various things that were happening in my life, I was asking the same questions that a lot of people ask. Why me? Why is the world unfair? I was bristling at the unfairness. I romanticized everyone else's life. You know, how come they're not having to deal with this particular challenge, but they are having, you know? And what I wanted to do was also give people strategies that they could use with minimal energy on reserve. Some of us might have the means of saying, I'm going to go on a year-long trip and, like, run away from my problems and, you know, have that life. That's not an option for most humans, okay? We have responsibilities at home. We have humans we need to take care of. We can't just leave our lives. and go away. And honestly, it's hard to actually get a respite from your own brain, no matter where you go. And so what I wanted to do was to give people guidance that they could implement when they're falling asleep at night, when they're in the car shuffling kids from one place to the next, when they're cleaning their kitchen countertops. Like, I was reflecting on one of the strategies I recommend in the book literally the other day when I was doing dishes. I wanted these light touch, light lift strategies so that any person with any means and who might have minimal time on their hands could still experience vast improvements in their well-being just through these changes in perspective and, again, asking the right questions, the right thought experiments, the right evidence-based strategies. And so I'm really coming, I understand what the grieving and paralyzed mind feel like. And I was trying to meet people in that space, not the space of, oh, I'm so deeply energized by the idea of, like, no, no one feels like that after going through hard shit. Like, no one feels like that, right? And so I was really, and it didn't take much for me to get to that point because I was feeling that myself.
I just want to say thank you like 1,000 times. Like, thank you for the gift of this book to everyone.
Absolutely. Can I just end with one anecdote that I just wanted to share to kind of wrap up my story? Because
yes,
I wonder if everyone could just take a few minutes to do this particular exercise tonight, okay, who's listening. So it's called a self-affirmation exercise. And what it involves is reaffirming all of the identities that we carry that are not being threatened by the change we're going through. And it's a reminder to us that, yes, while we are experiencing a massive life change, there might still be parts of our life that are still very much intact and that we can anchor ourselves to. So my husband, who's a software engineer, unexpectedly engaged me in the self-affirmation exercise on the night of the second miscarriage. So to set the scene, we had seen healthy beating hearts. And then 5 hours later, we're confronted with the news that there's been a miscarriage and we've lost identical twin girls. Okay. So 2 hours later, I'm in bed and I am beside myself with grief. And my husband comes in and he looks at me and he says, Mai is his pet name for me. He's like, Mai, why don't we just do a quick gratitude exercise? Let's just say a couple things we're grateful for. And I was like, hell nah, bro. I'm not doing this. You take your toxic positivity, your Instagram nonsense, you go to the corner, you do your gratitude exercise. I'm not doing any of this. I'm going to sleep. And like, I don't know, I looked at his sweet face and he kind of wore me down because I was like, oh, maybe I'll just get him off my case if I do this. So I started small. I was like, well, okay, fine. I'll just name a couple things. I said, well, I'm really grateful that I get to do my Zoom workouts with my personal trainer. Like, how lucky am I that I have this lovely, joyful person in Matt that I get to gossip about The Bachelor and Love is Blind with, you know, a couple times a week. I really love that I live in California, like the strong, beautiful rays of sunshine, like really lift my spirits. I love being an aunt to my 6 nieces and nephews. I love the fact that I've worked with the same people for over 10 years. Like, what a gift that I get to work with some of my best friends. And I swear to God, you guys, something magical happened in that moment. I had been so single-mindedly fixated on this goal of becoming a mom and had been so laser focused on it that I had developed tunnel vision. I had forgotten that I had this rich and otherwise expansive life that sat outside of that space. And so I suddenly felt so much less emptied and hollowed than I had minutes earlier when I felt like my entire identity was wrapped up in this thing. And so you can do an affirmation exercise again in just a matter of minutes. Take out your notes app on your phone. If you're going through a really tough patch in your relationship, you can emphasize your spiritual life, which you really value. If you're having a really hard time as a parent, you can emphasize that you love the community that We Are Brave Together brings you. If you are struggling with your job, you can be reminded that you have a wonderful pickleball league that you've just joined and like they bring you a lot of joy. There's always going to be something, I promise, something in your life that brings you joy, that gives your life meaning and purpose, and that is a really solid part of your identity. And it just becomes a matter of where you're focusing your lens. Like, imagine you have a camera, right? You're just shifting the focus from all the stuff that's on fire to this one space of calm and meaning and beauty. And I believe all of us can do that every day.
I don't want to say goodbye.
Well, we're going to be friends. So there's not really goodbye.
We're going to be friends. We are friends. We are friends. Yeah. Where can everybody find your book?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's so exciting. I'm so honored again to be on this podcast, but the book is out. It's called The Other Side of Change, Who We Become When Life Makes Other Plans. And you can find The Other Side of Change anywhere you buy books. You can also follow my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans. And I'm on Instagram at Dr. Maya Shankar. So that's DrMayaShankar. And I really look forward to connecting with this community. I mean, Jessica, as you know, you reach out to me over Instagram and I was able to read the book and everything, but I really believe in this group. I feel so much admiration for all of you. I've read the incredible book full of testimonials of your stories. And so I'm just like cheering you on and I hope I can be of support in any way I can moving forward.
You already have been tremendous support, even in this last 45 minutes. I mean, I feel refreshed and revived. And I love
so much.
I love little glimmers of hope.
Yes, exactly. And they're always there. They just require an attentive observer.
Yes.
Thank you so much. We wish you the best success with this book.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks so much for listening today on UK Health Radio.
Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms, offering support groups that are virtual and in-person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. And we have published our first anthology of caregiving stories entitled Becoming Brave Together, Heroic, Extraordinary Caregiving Stories from Mothers Hidden in Plain Sight. It will encourage and validate every parent caregiver. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood awaits you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast, links, show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.